Welcome. It's Thursday night and time for Psychic Viewpoint on PsychicAccessTalkRadio.com. Spirituality, psychic development, love and relationships, manifesting prosperity, and more. You now have access to the world's most renowned spiritual teachers, healers, psychics, and mediums as you join us during this transpersonal collective experience. Sponsored by PsychicAccess.com, where all psychics have been interviewed, verified, and accuracy tested, assuring you the highest quality of quality service. And now, on with this week's show.
Hello, my name is Stephen Lewis, and you're listening to the Psychic Viewpoint, sponsored by PsychicAccess.com. In a moment, Harvard-educated psychotherapist Peter Woodrow will join us to talk about the 20th century's most documented psychic, Edgar Cayce. But before we get started, please join me in welcoming my co-hosts. Maureen, how are you tonight?
I'm fine, thank you. I'm looking forward to your show, Stephen.
Well, thank you very much. I'm looking forward to it as well. Peter Woodrow is a bit of a dramatist. He represents Edgar Cayce on stage and in the theater. So we're talking about a gentleman who knows this psychic's life and work very well. So I'm excited too.
Yeah.
But you're also in the business of giving therapy to people and counseling people through mystical means.
Miss Know-It-All?
Reason you're Miss Know-It-All, because you know quite a bit, and what do you do over at Psychic Access?
I'm an intuitive psychic empath who utilizes tarot cards. I utilize tarot as my main tool. I do feel tarot is a symbolic record of human experience. That is why I utilize it, and they're just all around really cool. And I help people with all sorts of things. Mainly, I do this work because I must, and I love what I do.
Absolutely, we can certainly tell. We love having you aboard. So, sit back, relax, and enjoy the interview.
Thank you, Stephen.
Sure. Well, Steve, how are you doing this evening?
I'm doing well, thank you.
I'm glad to hear that. What do you do over at PsychicAccess.com?
I'm a psychic medium and hermetic astrologer.
Hermetic astrologer. Can you tell us a little bit what that is?
Hermetic astrologer? Yeah, absolutely. Hermetics is based upon the work of the ancient mystery schools, Hermes, Thoth, and I work with hermetic progression. So a lot of astrologers, as you know, work with a transit. So they feel that events are created or described by transiting planets, but in hermetic astrology we know that they only act as triggers, and they have to trigger underlying energies which are described by hermetic progressions. So we work with those hermetic progressions to accurately understand what's occurring and what's going to occur in future.
Very good. Well, we really appreciate you joining us tonight, and hope you enjoyed the interview as well. In a moment, we have with us Harvard-educated psychotherapist Peter Woodberry to join us and talk about the 20th century's most documented psychic, Edgar Cayce. Peter has a bit of a dramatic flair as well. He portrays Edgar Cayce in theater, such as his knowledge of this great psychic, and tonight he visits with the Psychic Viewpoint in order to share his insights into Cayce's work and methods. Hi, Peter. Welcome to the show. How are you?
Good. Thanks for having me.
Thank you very much for joining us. You were telling us before that you were going to do some traveling. Is this something that are you doing this in conjunction with spreading the message about Edgar Cayce, or was this unrelated type of research you're doing?
No, this is with the Edgar Cayce Center. They probably do about 4 or 5 tours a year, and we go to spiritual sites around the world, and so the focus is, we go to these, like Easter Island, we go to Easter Island in Chile, and we're going to see the Moai and just kind of learn about the spiritual traditions of these places. And that's kind of the focus of ARE tours. You know, like we used to go to Egypt, we go to Machu Picchu in Peru, and sacred energy sites around the world.
So let's just briefly go into real quick what ARE is.
Oh, okay. The ARE was founded by Edgar Cayce, and it was founded in 1931, and it's called the acronym is the Association for Research and Enlightenment, and it was Edgar Cayce's hope that, you know, he had a number of psychic gifts and abilities, and he gave readings, and he wanted to start a center where like-minded people could learn more about psychic phenomenon. And it's grown to be a international organization where we host about 2 conferences a month, where we have New Age folks of all different kind of walks of life that come. You know, like some of them are the well-known folks like Deepak Chopra, and we have Carolyn Mace coming back this year. So folks like that, and then some folks that are lesser known, just coming to share their work and their experiences and kind of what they're doing. It's more in the alternative kind of metaphysical realm, but with the purpose of working towards enlightenment, you know, the kind of spiritual development and growth of the participants.
Understood. And this organization was actually founded by Edgar Cayce himself, correct?
That's right, yes.
Wow, that's amazing. Well, you know what? Who is this guy that we all assembled here to talk about tonight? Where is he from? You know, who is Edgar Cayce? Can you give us a little bit of biography?
Yeah, sure.
Thank you.
Yeah. There's probably, I don't even know how many, there's probably like 25 biographies written about him, and there's only one that was published in his lifetime. That's called There is a River. And anyone who's interested in learning more about Edgar Cayce, it's probably a good place to start with his biography, There is a River. He was born in rural Kentucky, a small town near Hopkinsville, Kentucky, in 1877. His family were sharecroppers, mostly tobacco, and so just kind of humble people. But Edgar Cayce had unusual psychic abilities that he started demonstrating as a child. He could see the energy patterns that surrounded people, you know, what we call auras. He could pick up people's thoughts. He had sort of transcendent communication with spiritual beings like angels. And he could see folks that were in the other realms, deceased people and that sort of thing.
This is what amazes
me. So he's got... Yeah, go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, this is what amazes me about Edgar Cayce, because he had all of these psychic gifts, and yet he came from a Protestant background. And it just, you know, I spent a lot of time wondering how he fit, for lack of a better word, all of that weirdness into a stolidly Protestant framework. You know what I'm saying? It's interesting to me.
Yeah, since he was a child, he was reading the Bible, so he was also very interested in the Bible, and he wanted to be a preacher, but the schools where he lived, they only went to something like 7th or 8th grade, so he couldn't get the education that he wanted in order to become a preacher. But his mother was very influential in his life, and she was not a fire and brimstone sort of person at all. She really helped him accept his abilities as being under God. You know, she said, what matters more is what you do with it, not whether it's good or bad in and of itself. Well, and so that's the way he kind of lived.
He certainly had a gift. I mean, it's this guy, he just beggars description, the size and the power of his gift, which leads to my next question. Once others discovered this gift that Mr. Cayce had, what sort of volume of readings did he do? How many readings did he give?
Well, what happened was he was really trying to just make it as a mainstream young person. You know, when he left Hopkinsville and he went to the nearest town, which was Bowling Green, he just tried to get a job. And one of his strange abilities that he had is that he could sleep on a book. He would retain photographic memory of its contents.
Wow.
And so, so he slept on the catalog of this bookstore, and he went in, and he knew every book they had and where it was. And so they hired him. And so that was, you know, that was the beginning of his career. But then he lost his voice. And he lost his voice for about a year. And they tried everything to try to cure it. And then it was under hypnosis that he was able to speak. And in this process of going, you know, under trance many times, he actually started to, they found out that he could diagnose the condition that he had, and he could prescribe the treatment for it. And then, you know, what he said is that it was psychosomatic. You know, it was almost like something was speaking through him that was saying that, you know, he's got a psychosomatic condition. Give him the hypnotic suggestion right now to return the blood flow to normal conditions in his throat. Mm-hmm. And he did that, and he came out, and he could speak. And the doctors that had been working with him got the strange idea, like they, what they saw was so weird that they wondered if he might be able to do that for other people. And so that became what were called readings, that he, they brought them, you know, he, they put him under trance, and then they would just say the name of these patients that they had. He would go under trance, and then he could diagnose them. He would go through, you know, his readings are like a doctor. He would give pulse, you know, he would give, you know, numbers of what the, what was going on throughout the body, all the system, you know, whether circulatory or, and then he would go to where the problems are, where the stagnations are, and then he would go on to prescribe the treatments for it. And when people would follow these strange protocols, sometimes they would get better.
I was reading a report written by a doctor who witnessed Casey's ability, and this physician rather rudely used the word illiterate to describe Edgar Casey, but
yeah,
just to give people perspective of how cogently and lucidly and intelligently Edgar Casey was able to discuss, you know, the mechanics of your disease to you. You know, this is really what blew away the medical establishment. And so what, and so this is how the readings themselves got started, right? Through health issues.
Through there were, you know, the, you asked earlier how many readings he gave. That he kept, at some point he decided he wanted to start having copies kept of them. So the organization has copies of over 14,000 readings, but he probably gave about another 1,000 before he kept copies. So he probably in total gave over 15,000 readings. About 2/3 of those were on health, and then certain people would come by and they said, you know, they, you know, it started off with health readings, and then people started asking all kinds of questions. So he actually gave readings on 10,000 different subjects.
It's almost as if once the populace, it's almost they once they discovered that this tool existed, then the whole population just sort of turned and started trying to use it, you know.
Yeah, and it was, you know, it was before the internet and all that sort of thing. So he, his fame, so to speak, only spread by word of mouth. You know, there wasn't, there were a couple articles that were written about him here and there, and then his biography came out, and then he became, you know, the biography became a bestseller. And so then he got some fame. But the fame is really what did him in, because he was told he should only give 2 readings a day.
Right.
And then when his biography came out, he started getting inundated, and it was during World War II. He died in 1945, and he just started giving 8 and 10 readings a day, which just exhausted him, and he eventually died from heart failure.
Oh, and I guess we can only speculate that the volume of readings he did may or may not have contributed to that toll on his body, you know. But it's kind of,
yeah. Well, he. Yeah, the reading, you know, he would get readings about the process of giving readings, and it said 2 or 3 a day max. And so that time in his life, he overdid it. You know, I don't know what it was, whether, I don't know what exactly how come it was taxing on the body. But
this is certainly a lot different than, for example, what myself and my colleagues do at psychicaccess.com. It's way different than what Edgar Casey is doing, in the sense, you know, like you said, the internet chain had, you know, it didn't exist in Edgar Casey's days. I believe he a lot of these internet a lot of these readings via post and all that good stuff. But I can certainly say 14,000 readings is a staggering number of readings, and you know, it's really, really hard to fake anything like that. You know, it's because these readings are widely available, right? I mean, I could anybody just buy these?
If you Yeah, you can buy them, or if you join the ARE, they're available online. If you join the Association for Research Enlightenment, or EdgarCasey.org, it's a membership-based organization, right. And once you become a member, you can have access to all the reading.
Yeah, and I tell you, when you read these things, I mean, when I read them at least, I'm just, you know, there's just one thought that pulses through your head, and it's that, oh my goodness, there's just too much detail here for any, even the most imaginative human being to make up out of the clear blues, to invent, you know.
No, it's impossible. Yeah, it's impossible for this stuff to have gotten made up. And then sometimes he would, you know, give a reading for somebody, and then 15 years later they'd come back, and, you know, the readings would pick up right off where this guy had been before. You know, how could you explain that kind of a, I mean, if it was like memory, just, you know, right up, you know, the first thing would say, we've had this body before, recognizing this individual.
Sure.
And then it would proceed from where it had left off with the first last reading.
That's amazing. I mean, Edgar Casey is marvelous on so many levels. Even if you are a strict materialist and just believe in nothing but the senses and physical science, you have to marvel over Casey just as a freak of nature. You know, this ability, you know, with the photographic memory and all of. But if that weren't enough, you know, now he's the sleeping prophet on top of that. Now, the health issues were sort of the stimulus for getting these readings started. But they, like you said, you mentioned over 10,000 topics that Mr. Casey touched upon. Ancient civilizations are one of the big topics, especially Atlantis and ancient Egypt. He had a lot to say about these two places. Why these two places? What's the fascination?
Why, Mr. Casey? Well, the second most popular type of reading that he gave, beside the health readings, were what are called life readings.
Right.
So somebody would come in and kind of, you know, just wonder, you know, what's going on in my life? You know, what strengths and abilities do I have? You know, what should I be doing? Or, you know, what's going on? How come I'm struggling in this, in my marriage, or something like that? And then what he would do in a life reading is that he would go back, and he said he could access something called the Akashic Records. And then he would draw forward four important lifetimes in this person's, you know, kind of life, you know, soul history. And he would just talk about kind of what that soul had worked on in these different lifetimes. And they were basically towards kind of reminding the soul, you know, the person in this life, kind of what they had focused on, what strength and abilities they had, kind of offering them direction and guidance, sometimes about a relationship. You know, if they were asking about their partner, it would show that, you know, where it started, the kind of the struggles they had. Maybe they got along real well in this life, and then in this life they were adversaries, and then how they're trying to work it out in the current life. But you had asked about Atlantis and Egypt. There were probably, I would say, three civilizations, you know, ancient civilizations that Casey said were very high spiritually. You know, he talked about how we came into the earth and that we're spiritual in nature, and we came into this material dimension, and it's not natural for the soul, because the soul is like one with everything. And in here, things are separate. And so that was kind of this experiment, which is kind of coming into here. And so there was, in this experiment with separation, we began to develop greed and power and these sorts of non-spiritual qualities. But he said there were three civilizations where we were doing pretty well, where we were maintaining, you know, we were living based on spiritual principles. And he said that the first one was in Lemuria, the second one was in Atlantis, and the third one was in Egypt.
So these places were spiritual prototypes of what a human civilization could be.
Yes. And then he said each one fell. You know, he said Lemuria was one of the first kind of soul civilizations on Earth. And he said we weren't even very physical back then. He said we were just kind of like thought forms. Mm-hmm. And then he just wrote that article I was telling you about. I was researching that. He says Easter Island is a remnant of Lemuria. And the names that people had were like Om, you know, they were like mantras. You know, we were like Om and Yaum and stuff like that.
Uh-huh.
And so we were much more like vibratory energies that rather than pure physical forms. But then we got drawn in. Atlantis was a later and a more dense time. But we were also working with spiritual laws. But then he said there was a split off, you know, they were called it the Children of the Law of One and then the Children of Belial. And that became, brought Atlantis actually down. And Egypt was another time where he said the five races were able to work together in harmony and balance. They were doing a lot of good work with a lot of the ancient Egyptian teachings, which are still around. He says really reflected that. He says, you know, most people that you talk to have some kind of deep kind of soul connection to Egypt. You know, when you talk about Egypt to people, it's almost like, like a soul memory of a time when we got along better.
Yeah, there's something special about ancient Egypt. It doesn't really matter what your personal spiritual background is. We just have a sort of, you know, homing, like it's like a beacon for a spiritual beacon for us. The pyramids in ancient Egypt. And so these places were, and you used the word dense to describe Atlantis, which was interesting because you said in Lemuria we were less material, and then in Atlantis we're more dense. So are we sort of becoming more and more physical as we move from these locales, from Lemuria to Atlantis to ancient Egypt? So are we becoming, you know, more real and more there physically?
Yes, more. Well, because at the beginning we were, I guess you could say we were like 90% spiritual and maybe 10% physical. And then we got to be maybe 50-50. And I don't know what we're at now. I'd hate to think, but, Casey did talk about that, starting in 1998, there was just this, you know, he's talked about these changes that go on in the human physiology. You know, he calls them root races. Mm-hmm. He said in 1998 was the beginning of this next root race. You know, we at the ARE were kind of looking at what kind of things are they noticing. Is there anything interesting that even science is noticing in the human body? And one of the things they're finding is that phosphorus is becoming more present in the human body than it was, let's say, 50 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And you know what? We don't know what, you know, but phosphorus is, you know, what's in a match. It just means light. So we're hoping that there's some connection with this next root race and phosphorus, and just perhaps they're, you know, moving back to being less physical, maybe more light-bearing.
That certainly makes a lot of sense to me because, my academic background is from the life sciences, and, you know, I happen to know that phosphorus is a vital element in developing energy and giving the body energy to metabolize things. Phosphorus is almost like the currency of the body as far as energy is concerned. So that really makes a lot of sense to me that this element might be associated with a higher sort of spiritual and physical type of mixture than what we're accustomed to now in the modern world.
Yeah. Yeah, that makes sense.
Well, it's so interesting about Edgar Cayce because, you know, he had his fingers in so many different pies. We've talked about some of the health issues that he dealt with, and, you know, I would like to expand on that in a few minutes. But, you know, then he also had access to this intricate cosmology. He had a lot to say about the origin of humanity. And
That's my favorite subject.
That's your favorite subject. I see. And is there any particular reason why you have an affinity for that? I guess what you call them, the life readings?
Well, yeah. I mean, I guess as a kid, I was always interested in, I liked Aesop's fables. I liked teaching stories. And I've always been interested in like creation stories, you know, how people make meaning. And then kind of finding the similarities in the different creation mythology. And then Cayce had his own, you know, and then I think we all kind of have this intuitive kind of barometer that, that helps us decide for ourselves if something makes sense or not.
Right.
And there's and with Casey's work, especially his cosmology, that just resonates with me. Like, it's like, you know, I like to think that I can bring my brain to the new age, you know, that I don't just have to take stuff on blind faith, that you're allowed to think through stuff and think, does this make sense? Is this going to have some kind of resonance? And for me, it has, you know. For me, it's...
Absolutely.
You know, I did a lot of searching before coming to Casey, and I just found, like, it was a great way of synthesizing a lot of different information.
I think a lot of us take comfort, myself included, from this idea that there were antecedents of us before, that, you know, there was a me before in Lemuria, that I existed in Atlantis in ancient Egypt, and, you know, maybe even I'll continue to exist beyond that. And because of that, then, you know, now I really need to watch my behavior and how I treat other people, because, you know, now I'm coming to terms with my own immortality.
You know,
that's the thing that really comforts, I think, a lot of people. With Edgar Casey. Now, he also had much to say. I mean, and this is what fascinates me about this gentleman, is because he taught Sunday school. I mean, I'm a Southerner, like Edgar Casey is, and so it's hard for me sometimes to, you know, mix metaphysics with my Southern roots, especially my Protestant background. You know, but Edgar Casey actually had a lot of commentary about Jesus Christ and the Essenes, who were a sect of Jews who lived during the time of Jesus. Can you tell us some of the observations and insights he made into Jesus in that group?
Well, that's another one of my favorite subjects. He takes Jesus and he takes him out of just mere Christianity,
mm-hmm.
and he makes Jesus into like a universal figure. Like, even in his incarnation as Jesus, you know, there are those lost years from 13 to 30.
Right, right.
And Casey goes into what was going on at that time. And like you said, he was born, you know, the story, you know, that I was raised with is that, you know, Joseph and Mary are just like two shepherds, and somehow they have this kid who turns out to be, you know, the great prophet, and it goes about, you know, teaching everybody and changing the world.
Right.
And I remember I thought that story made me feel like, God, I'm chopped liver, man. I get born to shepherds, and he's like leading the world, and my parents are halfway, you know, I'm more educated, and I'm not half that. And I can't. Casey's story is that, you know, his birth was prepared for by these Essenes. And the word Essene means expectant, that they expected that the prophecies of the Messiah indwelling in the world were going to be fulfilled. And so they prepared for that. They built this whole structure. And you know, with astrology and astronomy and, you know, understanding the stars, and Casey goes into the Immaculate Conception of Mary, and you know, it's like his stories about it are so detailed, and they're fascinating. You know, he goes into, like, there wasn't just one, you know, virgin pregnant. There were 12 of them, and they didn't know, you know, which one. You know, they're like, heck, you know, we knew it was going to be in that conception. You know, maybe some of them weren't immaculate. I don't know. They were 12, and then he says that the Archangel Gabriel identifies Mary, and then, you know, Jesus is born, he's taught by this Essene sect, he's reminded of who he is, and from 13 to 30, you know, when a Jewish boy would have a bar mitzvah and get prepared for marriage, that was not Jesus's calling, so they took him to India. They think he spent about 4 years in India, and he learned all the Vedas, and he learned the Bhagavad Gita. You know, he learned the Hindu religion, or reminded himself of it.
Mm-hmm.
And then he went to Persia, where he had in a past life been part of Zoroastrianism. And he was reminded of the teachings there. And then he went back to Egypt, and Casey said that in a previous lifetime, he'd been the architect of the Great Pyramid.
Wow.
And that the one of the main experiences that you gain in the king's chamber there, is where they have the chamber of the open tomb, where they have the sarcophagus. There's two small entryways into the King's Chamber that they, archaeologists have thought must be air ducts. And Casey says, no, those aren't air ducts. Those point towards stargates. And the initiate would be in the sarcophagus, and the soul would leave directed through the that opening, mm-hmm. and would either go to something like Arcturus and leave this known universe for 3 days and come back in through Polaris, I think, and come back to the body. And that's what, Jesus' mission was, to try to teach the souls that had kind of gotten so material to remind them of their spiritual origins. And the Great Pyramid was one of those initiatory or remembering structures. And so he went back to Egypt and, reinitiated himself in what he had created. And then he comes into Israel to basically teach not just the Old Testament, mm-hmm. but he's really incorporating a world religion. So he's bringing a much broader perspective about God and who we are than any single religion. I remember just all of that. And then there's just, he goes into beautiful stories about the miracles that Jesus performed. Since Casey in his waking state was so Christian, that the readings about Christianity are one of the main ones. That was because Casey and his friends were Christian. They were curious about that.
Right.
And so I think if Casey had been Buddhist, they would have focused on Buddha, the one that you practice.
Yes.
So that was their focus.
That's what I like about, as you mentioned, his comments about Jesus always place him within this larger pantheon of a universal spirituality, something that we can, something that speaks to all of us, which is, unfortunately, I think in a lot of modern faces of Christianity, we don't see that spiritual generosity. Do you see? It's all very selfish and egotistical. You have to do it, my way or the highway.
Right.
And Mr. Casey is making this a universal, making Jesus a universal participant in all of the world's religions. Now, Edgar Casey himself was a mover and a shaker in ancient Egypt. Am I right about that?
Yes. He had, it was probably one of his, most spiritual lifetimes, where he was a priest named Ra.
Right.
Who had a king. It was before pharaohs. They had a king, and the king was sort of the ruler of the economic world of the country. And then Ra was the high priest, and he was the overseer of the spiritual. Back then, they were equally as important.
Right.
And so he and this king worked together on ruling the country. It was quite a involved story, but he apparently, when he passed away from that lifetime, he was told that he had entered the earth plane, that he didn't have to reincarnate. Casey added something to kind of karma and reincarnation. He says that we travel in soul groups, and that he, as a member of a soul group, didn't want to just move on without his soul group also kind of transcending the earth. So he went back in. He chose to reincarnate. And then he had a lifetime. One of the things he says is that you carry these soul attributes with you. So when he was Ra'ta, he was highly psychic. Mm-hmm. And that stayed with him. So when he incarnated in early America, he was a fellow named James Bainbridge. But James Bainbridge, born very psychic, got seduced by kind of selfishness and became a riverboat gambler. He could see people's cards, and he seduced women like crazy. And so, when he passed away from that lifetime, the lesson, what he was told is, your consciousness fell then. He said that sin is basically selfishness, when we gain at somebody else's cost. And he said that's why Edgar Casey had to go into trance. He said, like, Ra'ta could have given you a reading in waking state. You could have walked into Ra'ta, and he would have looked at you, and he could have told you everything about your health. He could have given you your past lives. But since Casey had misused that ability as James Bainbridge, it was taken from his conscious control. And that's why he had to go into a trance state to be able to give reading.
And that may be, and I'm speculating here, that also may be why he never really improved his financial position with these readings either.
Oh, yeah. He had, he's considered the father of holistic medicine because of the mind, body, spirit. And a lot of his readings were about the mind-body connection. And he said that for himself, he says, you know, in readings he would say, Edgar Casey associates money with evil. You know, and so he's never going to be rich. If you connect money with evil, you're not going to draw it to you.
Right. A lot of books have sprung up about Edgar Casey. I mean, he's almost an industry in and of himself. And yet the man himself, ironically enough, lived and died in very modest means. In fact, I believe he was a photographer by profession, wasn't he?
Yes.
That just blows my mind that someone who can do all the marvelous things that he did, put bread in his mouth by being a photographer. That really, I think, says a lot about Mr. Casey right there.
Well, he knew that he couldn't use his psychic ability for personal financial gain. It was just like intuitive in him. Mm-hmm. And sometimes, you know, if he would give a reading, he would go unconscious. You know, he said, he would make a joke. He says, I've given thousands of readings. I've never heard one. And so he would be out. But his own father, you know, there's stories about his dad was a kind of a rogue. And when his dad was thinking anyway to make money. So when he heard his son could do these trance things, he said, hey, son, you know, my neighbor's not feeling so good. They put you under trance. And anybody could do it. He was very highly hypnotizable. It's just that would put him under trance. As soon as he was under, he'd take out the newspaper and he'd say, all right, who's going to win the first horse race? Who's going to win the second? And what Casey would do in these trance readings is that he would, you know, see the horses and he says, well, you know, Lucky Seven's the favorite. But Lucky Seven hurt his ankle this morning. He's barely going to be lucky if he finishes, you know, whatever this other one, you know, horse is looking good. And so, you know, the father was making money off of these bets. But Casey says when he would wake up from any type of reading that was used for selfish gain, he would have a really bad headache. And he eventually found out what his father was doing and very disillusioned. You know, he eventually, you know, so many people exploited him, he stopped giving readings for a while. He didn't want to.
Sure.
He moved from Kentucky to Selma, Alabama, and just wanted to be a church-going photographer. But then his son burnt his eyes playing with the flash powder, you know, the old way they used to take pictures is you had to make like a little explosion with the flash powder.
Right.
And, you know, what
the thing, and it would go poof.
Yeah. And what right. Little 4-year-old boy isn't going to love that? So he was playing with it and dropped a match into the whole can of it, and it exploded and burnt his face and burnt one of his eyes. And the little boy, you know, Hugh Lynn, asked his dad, give a reading, because the doctor said he's going to lose one eye, maybe both. And through the readings, both of his eyes were saved. It was a strange treatment that was prescribed. But that got J.C. doing readings again in Alabama. And that's where they got this woman involved who was named Gladys Davis, who became the transcriptionist. And that's when he started keeping copies of the readings.
Now,
that's the 14,000 readings we have. They started with Gladys Davis writing them down in Selma, Alabama.
Oh, so up until this point, up until Casey had gotten disillusioned and his son had gotten blinded, up until this point, nothing had been archived.
No. So that's where about 1,000 readings were given before he started keeping copies. Like that when he decided with his wife that they were going to start getting readings again, they learned from the mistakes. And then he asked his wife if she would be the only person to conduct the readings, and then they decided to hire a stenographer. And it's a funny story because they went through their church and asked, you know, let it be known. And then they had like an audition where like 5 young women came in to practice, you know, to see who would get the job. And the way that they auditioned these girls is that they he did a reading. They turned the lights back on her. Gladys Day was the only one left in the room. The other girls ran out of
there. They got spooked.
they got spooked, and so she stayed with them. She was like a daughter. She stayed with them their whole life, and she stayed at the ARE until she passed away.
Now, well, before we start talking more about some of the health-oriented readings, Edgar Cayce was approached by some geologists or some prospectors for people looking for minerals and oils, too, right?
Yes, yeah. Those are some of the saddest. It was a hard time for him. You know, he wanted to get, his dream was because, you know, he, probably just like today, most people, you know, don't go to a psychic the first thing when they're sick. You know, they go to their doctor, and then when the doctors give up on them, they go to psychics. And it was the same thing then. So the people that were asking for readings were on their deathbed sometimes. And the treatments that were prescribed, a lot of times these people couldn't get the treatments. And so some folks were dying that Cayce thought, you know, he wanted to give this a shot. So his dream was to open up a hospital, but, you know, he didn't have the money for that. And so then the reading said, you know, as long as if you use this source for money that's going to be helpful to people, it will work. But he said, you know, everybody's got to be on board. Well, so he goes to Texas, and, you know, who's going to get, you know, all these guys, you know, drilling for oil to be thinking that they're going to use this for good causes. So it's just one disaster after another. And, he, you know, the stories were about how cutthroat those people are. You know, they might find some, and then all the equipment would be sabotaged and stuff like that. So it's a real rough community down there around drilling for oil. He was like a babe in the woods.
Yeah, he probably shouldn't have been around those types of fellows, should he?
Yeah. He for a while, he just wasn't with his family, and his son had to come and get him. I mean, it was like a failure time for him in his life. But anytime he was used for money, now, there were also readings given that Blackbeard used to hang out here in Virginia Beach, and that he buried one of his treasures in what's now this park. And so his sons were trying to get these readings so they could find the treasure, and they never found anything.
That's very interesting to me, because I'm in North Carolina, and Blackbeard, you know, is a big deal around here. You know, he's a North Carolina.
Oh yeah.
He's a Tar Heel pirate. I might add, he was executed by a Virginia governor, but we won't go into all of that here.
Yeah.
And he was supposed to have left a lot of treasure around the area. And it's that.
Yeah, you said he liked it up here. I mean, it's not far.
Well, you said before that Mr. Cayce's prescriptions for some cures, they were kind of weird or different. Can you give us some examples of some people who were sick and Edgar Cayce prescribed them a treatment that maybe was at odds with medicine or?
Oh, sure. Lots of times. Like, his wife had tuberculosis.
Oh, wow.
And the main treatment that he had was for her to breathe the fumes in a charred oak keg of apple brandy.
What?
And the fumes of apple brandy were like, you know, it's like, you know, alcohol is an antiseptic.
Okay.
And so just breathing in those fumes into the lungs would slowly help her lungs come back to health. But there were other treatments that she needed, and part of it would involve heroin.
Wow.
So it was part of one of the substances that she would take, you know, I don't know how much of it was,
right,
was involved heroin. And then for his son, when he lost his eyes, part of the treatment that he prescribed was the tannic acid to be applied over the eyes. And the doctors said, that's crazy. You know, I mean, they just said he's going to lose his eye anyway, so you can put tannic acid if you want. But tannic acid is the acid that you use to soften leather, you know, like they clean with tan leather.
Right.
You use tannic acid. So that was something they were very surprised worked. Yeah, and then some of the things that he prescribed are now mainstream. You know, but they won't give him credit for it. You know, like
right.
He talked about gold and silver, that they accelerate the healing from burns, and he gave those readings. You know, like in 1901 or 1902. Well, lo and behold, if you go to a burn unit today, they use gold. I mean, gold is too expensive. They use silver to accelerate healing. But they say, oh, we discovered that in, you know, 1945 or 1930. You know, they don't want to say that we can document that well before it was, quote unquote, discovered. Right. It was in Kate's readings. So, you know, nobody in science or doctors is going to give credence to, you know, say, you know, they're not going to get any funding if they say, well, why are you doing this? Well, there's a psychic we want to check his stuff out. Right. So that's unfortunate.
That
worked.
That is unfortunate, because I think this is one of those areas of Edgar Casey's life that would most win over the skeptics, is because he had such successes with healing people. He healed so many people. For instance, I read some comments that he made, or some observations he made regarding psoriasis and it being connected to leaky gut syndrome. Which,
yeah, I'm a witness. I got healed of psoriasis from his from following that protocol, the leaky gut syndrome. Yeah.
No, because most I'm not even sure whether or not modern, quote unquote, conventional medicine understands the mechanics behind psoriasis, but I think they want to say it's an autoimmune disorder. They want to link it to the immune system.
Well, you know, beware of the science with autoimmune. They call everything autoimmune. You know, autoimmune, it just means your body is really angry and it's starting to attack itself. It means you're really toxic. But Casey's, you know, he talked a lot about the importance of the gut. And then what he said with psoriasis is that it's just toxins are passing through the intestinal lining, getting back in the blood, and they're getting released through the skin. So you have to take these teas, you have to change your diet and work with healing your gut. And I did it. And that you know, like you were saying before, medical science considers psoriasis uncurable.
Yeah.
And the best-selling book, if you, you know, go on Amazon, the best-selling book on psoriasis is this guy named John Pagano, who created a whole business, you know, a practice in Pennsylvania, curing people of psoriasis using Casey's protocol. He passed away about 2 years ago, but he healed thousands of people just getting them to follow the protocol. And he's got the evidence. He shows you all the pictures. He shows you how it works and you know, how to go about doing it.
Well, that certainly makes a lot of sense to me, because, you know, Casey, he was active when? Early 1900s, right on up. You say he died around the end of World War II, thereabouts. Now,
yeah.
Guts back in those days were probably, they probably accepted a lot healthier food than guts in this day and age. You know what I'm saying? You know what I'm driving at here?
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
And one can speculate on the amount of, I mean, illnesses that can be traced to just a really, really terrible diet. You know, man, Edgar Casey would have a field day working in the modern age.
Oh yeah, he was just beginning to start talking about the issues with pesticides and preservatives, and you know, the overuse of antibiotics. That was just coming in,
and
he was starting it. But like when he talked about eating food, he said, "Better to eat from an animal that gets to choose what it eats than one that's being fed."
Huh. And now this,
you know, that like a wild animal gets to pick its food, and he says, you know, a lot of these domesticated, like, you know, you have cows and stuff eating stuff that's not what they would normally eat. Like, even, I guess, bad cow disease is caused by the crazy stuff they fed cows.
I never really thought of my nutrition that way, that my prey, you know, it would pick its own feed. But now that I ponder that idea, I certainly would rather eat an animal that picked and chose its own food than one that was, you know, sort of jammed in with a thousand others of its kind and held in really unsanitary, unhygienic conditions. You know, so.
Oh yeah, well you see that with like eggs. You know, you see with these chickens that are real free range and are out there eating whatever they want. Their yolks are so yellow. Casey says, you know, the yellow is the B vitamins. And then these other ones, you know, the mass-produced chickens, you know, their yolks are almost white.
Huh. not to mention the fact that a lot of our food products, animals and vegetables, are being modified genetically and you know, shot up full of hormones and things of that nature. So this is really, really interesting to me, because while Edgar Cayce was spelling out his origins of humanity, while he was giving life readings and telling people what their function was in Atlantis and Lemuria and ancient Egypt, he was also, at the same time, this man has to have the most productive sleep of anyone I've ever seen. He's also at the same time fathering holistic health and understanding how the health of a human being is interwoven into all of his environmental factors. It's just amazing to me.
Well, he, the most recent biography, the biographer was given access to the confidential record, like the names of the people who got reading. Like, I guess after someone's deceased, it's no longer private. And, you know, we found that he was intimately involved with Nikola Tesla, the inventor.
Yeah.
And a couple of years ago, this is when I first moved here, I was at the desk, and this guy comes from the Tesla Museum, and he's saying, you know, Tesla left Edgar Cayce patents. In his will, he's got these patents that are, he said, I'm going to leave them to Edgar Cayce. So they came to talk about these patents that have been left for him. But Tesla had heard about Cayce and was very interested in this source. And Tesla was trying to work on, seems like a vibration that, what's different about somebody that's in love, that has, why do those people live longer than other people? And so he was trying to create that vibration that he could put it into people. You know, Tesla put a lot of electricity into himself. And Cayce talked a lot. He had two battery appliances that were for helping people heal. You know, he was talking about that we're electromagnetic being. And a lot of his energy medicine was about balancing the body out. But, you know, Tesla got readings. He also went to the White House secretly and gave two readings for the president at that time.
Wow.
And his read said that those readings that he gave for the president led to the foundation of what we've done, the League of Nations, which we now know of, the United Nations.
Well, Edgar Cayce should actually be included in textbooks and history books. It's a pity that he's not, and probably never will be, at least in this culture.
And I think the purpose of his life, though, was to be humble. But I think he had lifetimes where his ego got in the way, and he just seemed to resist in his lifetime any kind of fame or any kind of special attention. He didn't really want any of that.
I can only imagine what a partnership between Edgar Cayce and Nikola Tesla would yield.
Mm-hmm.
And unfortunately, I don't think society is really ready for Mr. Casey's ideas or Tesla's ideas, because they are so healing. Because there's so much money to be made off of sickness and suffering and misbehavior. Because Edgar Cayce did make his hospital, but it floundered due to financial reasons. He couldn't get the financial traction to make that hospital. I think it lasted for his life, and then after he passed away is when the hospital crumbled. Correct?
No, the hospital lasted just 2 years. He got the backing of these stockbrokers,
right?
But then they were infighting. Once he opened the hospital, he started giving more readings for the people in the hospital, and these stockbrokers were getting readings from Edgar Cayce where he was helping them interpret their dreams, and through the interpretation of the dreams, they were making money in their investment. So that created a tension that they weren't getting more readings, and then the stock market crashed and hit. So the hospital closed in 1930. It was open from like 28 to 30.
Okay, so
then the ARE was founded in 31, and the ARE continues to this day, and it's on the same site. They still have the hospital's there. It's like a historic site.
So the Association for Research and Enlightenment, that's the ARE, that's your organization, and I can find you guys at edgarcasey.org. That's the URL for that.
That's right. Right. Yeah.
Definitely, you guys listening want to visit www.edgarcasey.org because there you'll find all sorts of articles, a wealth of material and information about Edgar Casey. We've only scratched the surface tonight in this broadcast. And also the tours. One thing that impressed me about the association is that you guys organize these really awesome tours to exotic locales like Easter Island, Egypt, yeah, as well, Machu Picchu, and wow, I just can't think of a better vacation than to take an ARE tour to ancient Egypt and see these marvelous structures and learn about Edgar Casey's interpretation for them.
Right, and then we, you know, we meditate at these places and, you know, feel the energy, and then it's a group of, you know, there's small groups, probably sometimes between 10, 20, 30 people. And, you know, we do dream study together, and we do past life regressions during the trip. So it's just, I love, you know, I went, I think they make me a tour leader because I went on so many trips when I was a tourist. Well, I probably went on 10 as a tourist, and then they say, hey, come up here, why don't you start leading them? So I've probably led about just as many, about 10 now.
Well, we're actually getting into the final minutes of our time together here, unfortunately, but I wanted to ask you a couple of questions about you personally. Like,
sure.
I read on the ARE's website that you're involved in like a stage production of Edgar Casey's Life. What's that?
That's right. When I was in college and after college, I was I was in theater, and I was pondering whether I wanted to put both feet in that profession. And so for 2 years, I worked in study. I was in London and London and New York and in Washington, D.C., training and doing plays. And eventually, my parents were psychiatrists, so I was always interested in psychology. And psychology kind of drew me to theater. I liked not just understanding people, but then trying to portray their characters. But then I kind of put it aside, and I just went into, I'm a clinical social worker, so I do counseling. But then when the ARE was going to celebrate its 75th anniversary, they wanted to do a stage production of what was then called The Freak, an off-Broadway play that had been made about Edgar Casey. And so they found out that I had this background, and so they had me direct and act in it. But it changed. We ended up just doing we now call it an evening with Edgar Casey, where just Edgar Casey comes out and just, you know, tells the story of his life and talks about the times that we're living in and answers questions from the audience at Edgar Casey.
And you I love Casey, right?
Yeah, I play him, yes. I love doing it.
Well, I want to ask you this because you are in social work. You're a therapist and you deal with people. Do you use any of Edgar Casey's techniques in helping your patients recover from their traumas and challenges?
Oh yeah, yeah. My practice is mostly conventional, like therapy. Like I work with, you know, insurances, so I might not call it the things that Casey calls it. You know, like, sure, he believed that we create our world through our mind, because the mind is, you know, spirit is the cause, mind is the builder, and your life is the result. And the field of psychology is called cognitive behavioral therapy. And so I would say I'm a cognitive behavioral therapist, but it's really, it's the same thing as Casey's working on how people, you know, create a story about their life and how they feel about it and how that, you know, optimism begets optimism and pessimism begets pessimism. So I try to work with people on what it is they're building in their consciousness. And then as a result, I've made a subspecialty in hypnosis. You know, because of my fascination with the stories about, you know, I could tell you stories about just stuff that would happen while he was under hypnosis. He would speak foreign languages. He levitated, you know, just all these kind of, you know, stuff that was hard for me to believe. So I've studied hypnosis for the past 5 or so years. And then now I teach the hypnosis and past life regression course at the ARE.
That is absolutely amazing. I'll tell you what, I would love to go under hypnosis. Let's say that I have a smoking habit, or or some problem in my life, and I wanted to get your help, to get you to hypnotize me. Is that possible? Do you work mainly through insurances, or do you do private bookings as well?
No, I do both. Uh-huh. I've found that hypnosis is a very powerful tool. And it's something I use in my practice to try to help people move through things. And Casey put it interestingly. He said hypnosis will cure any condition as long as it's not karmic. And so you can, that's what I think the talking therapy works through the karmic stuff, and the hypnosis will wipe out anything that's not karmic. So it's almost like I like working with them both together. And basically, what he's saying is that sometimes we're dealing with things that we need to learn from that are there for a reason.
Right,
and hypnosis is just going to knock those out.
Well, how would I book a session with you if I were interested in a hypnotherapy session?
Well, you could call me or go. You want me to give you my number? Would that help?
Sure, that would be great. That would be great.
Yeah, you can reach me at 757-217-7159.
Oh, awesome. And you're also available at the Association for Research and Enlightenment.
Yeah, you can just, get on the website there and then just... you can go to the contact us and just say, I didn't catch his number, but I'd like to be in touch with Peter Woodbury, and then I'll get you the email, and then I'll call back whoever's interested.
There you go, ladies and gentlemen. You heard it right there. Contact Peter at the Association for Research and Enlightenment, or call the number that he just recited, and you can be the beneficiary of some of the techniques that Edgar Casey used, the trance and the hypnosis, and you can unlock a marvelous power, peace, in your life as well. Peter, I would really like to thank you for joining us tonight on The Psychic Viewpoint. This has been a lovely, lovely exploration of Edgar Casey's life. Thank you.
Oh, good. You're very welcome. Thanks for having me on, and I've enjoyed my time with you.
My pleasure. My pleasure, Peter.
And I don't want you guys to go anywhere, not you, my co-host, nor those listening at home, because we got an entire second half of the show, an entire second hour, and this is where you're going to get your free on-air reading with us. The Gifted Psychics.
We're never going to stop talking. We're never going to stop talking.
That's what we do. We communicate. We communicate. We're definitely communicated. Pretty soon I'm going to communicate the call number to you guys so that you can call in for your free reading. So go ahead and get your notebook handy, your pen and paper. If you couldn't get the last week's show, which was Atlantis Explained, presented by Steve, you can find a recorded archive link as well as archives of all previous shows on PsychicAccessTalkRadio.com under the Archives tab. So please feel free to circulate the archive links to your friend and family. It's our objective to connect with as many of you as possible, so please share that link with others. Also, be sure to visit our psychicbloggers.com site to learn about everything from paranormal reincarnation to the how-tos of psychic development. If you're interested in a reading from the best professional psychics on the net, go to psychicaccess.com, where you'll find the best verified and accuracy-tested psychics, each with their own unique gifts. Each psychic has a detailed profile for you to find out more about them and to choose from a list of some of the most authentic, gifted psychic talents on the internet today. It's an honor working with Doug and Psychic Access because of the high standards required of each psychic. All of us, all of the co-hosts here on PsychicAccessTalkRadio.com work at Psychic Access. And if you'd like a personal reading from any one of us, be sure to visit us at PsychicAccess.com. We would love to hear from you. Incidentally, site owners and webmasters, you can earn 50 cents per minute on every reading on traffic referred to PsychicAccess.com. For more details, visit PsychicAccess.com/webmasters. If you like our show, invite your friends to join us in our chat room. Listen to The Psychic Viewpoint. There's something in it for everybody. So please spread the word. We very much appreciate it. Okay, so now we come to that part of the show where we banter, we rant and rave about all of the wonderful things that our guests said. Maureen, what did you think about the interview?
I thought you two guys were just phenomenal. Just absolutely. I mean, I'm in awe right now. And I just want to tell you that I just learned so much.
Well, let me tell you something. You were the intellectual glue that held it all together, Maureen. Thank you. Yeah, you held it all together.
Yeah, thank you, Stephen.
Like Edgar Casey, you are also very humble, and that's how you can always tell the truly gifted psychic advisors, because they do have the humility for their gift, and you're certainly one of those, and you realize the importance of being humble to, so you can spread your light to other people. So that's one thing I've always liked about you, Maureen.
Well, you're so sweet. Gosh, shucks, yeah. Thank you. God.
What can I say? Well, you see what happens when you always say you're going to make me do your chores? It just makes me sweeter.
Yes, you're good. You're a good boy. Steven.
Well, listening to you on the show during the hour where we give the free readings, you know, you definitely have a compassion when you interact with the clients. And, you know, it's very important, because not only do people come to us to get answers to their questions, but also, if possible, to get a little comfort for you know, what they're going through, a little relief, as it were, you know, and you're very compassionate.
Well, you know, it is what it is, but... It is a word, but I think it's a really important word that we all should integrate into our persons. Absolutely. Along with integrity.
And mindfulness. Let's not forget mindfulness.
Forget that. And, no, you guys are just, I want to say, I'm going to take this time to say that that I really do love working on the show and having, you know, working with you fellas, with my boys, awesome.
Well, we love to have you here, Maureen. Definitely keep things lively. Later on, when we are going to take your calls, not quite yet, but later on, that number is going to be 724-444-4851. But we're not going to quite take calls quite just yet. But again, when we do, that number is 724-444-4851, and I'll let you know when the lines are open. Steve, one interesting thing about Edgar Casey was his comments regarding Thoth. And you mentioned him as pertaining to having importance to Hermetic occultism and Hermetic astrology. Would you care to expand on some of that commentary?
Well, the theory is that Thoth is one incarnation of the same entity, the same spirit.
Right.
So Hermes is another name, but the principle is that this entity, this spirit, incarnated many times. And in Hermetics, we're taught that Thoth or Hermes taught the three branches of Hermetics, which are astrology, alchemy, and magic.
Ah, okay, very good. So it's correct in understanding that the term Hermetic is synonymous with Thoth, Mercury, and Hermes.
Yes, it's a reference to Hermes, and therefore Mercury, and therefore Thoth.
Now I understand a little bit more. I mean, Hermetic mysticism and alchemy and astrology, it's always been something that's fascinated me, but it's sort of the upper reaches of mystical thought, mystical philosophy, but still very, very rewarding. Have you found it to reward your practice very well? I know you're one of our more popular psychics. So how do you mainly work? Through the astrology or the tarot on psychicaccess.com?
It depends on the reading, Stephen. Depends on what the client needs, to be honest. One of the challenges, I think, of trying to help people is that they often have a very fixed idea about how they want their questions answered.
Right.
And I like to use different tools depending on the inquiry. So in honesty, if somebody's asking me about their compatibility with somebody else, my view is that the absolute best way to analyze that is through synastry, which is looking at the astrological compatibility. If somebody wants a feel for how a relationship's going to play out or how a situation's going to turn out, then sometimes I'll look at it intuitively, and I'll also use tarot. But again, if you have time, you can look at astrology. So it really depends on the inquiry. I mean, some people, if they want to connect with somebody in spirit, then it's mediumship, and right, astrology doesn't enter the equation.
Understood. So it's hermeticism allows you to essentially, it presents you with a palette of tools, gives you more options. Is that correct?
Absolutely. Yeah. I think the big difference is that in, as I said earlier, in Hermetic astrology, you know, we work with progressions. So we look at the natal charts. It's of paramount importance. But we look at progressions to the natal chart to understand those deep circumstances at any point in time. And then we look at transits to see when those circumstances are triggered and transpire into events or likely events. But I'm particularly, to be honest with you, I'm fascinated by mundane astrology. I'm fascinated by world affairs. So the term mundane is associated with monde or mondial. And I really like looking at world events and predicting world events and dynamics between different nations and things like that. So that's what I do in my spare time and in terms of my research work and writing.
Well, I've got to say, Steve, I know a thing or two about your natal chart, and I want to say, if memory serves, that your moon is an intellectual, humanitarian Aquarius. So I can totally, you definitely have an eye for society as a whole, you know, and that's sort of what the mundane astrology deals with, right? Like the world as a whole instead of one particular person's natal chart, right?
Yeah, and my chart is mostly transpersonal. So you know how we have the personal energies and then the interpersonal energies and the transpersonal energies. So a baby is born into the world and it functions in a personal manner. It wants to be fed. It wants to cry. It's comfortable. It's not comfortable. It's happy. It's sad. It's all about what the baby wants and feels. So it's a personal energy. And the first four signs of the zodiac fall under the category of personal energy. And then you've got the interpersonal energies and the transpersonal energies. And the vast majority of the power in my chart is transpersonal. So I'm very interested in spirituality, and I'm interested in the overarching themes and issues and energies. But I get accused at times of not being focused enough upon individual relationships. I seem to be too far polarized towards the overarching themes rather than the individual relationships.
I think, I
was a hooker. I think I was very much involved in personal relationships, and quite frankly, this lifetime, I'm taking a bit of time out.
is that the source of your expertise in relationships, Steve, your past life? Well, that's, you know what? I just want to go ahead and mention that those phone lines are open. We are going to be taking your calls. The number again is 724-444-4851. We do have to take the call-ins first due to their wait time, but chat, if you have questions, those in the chat rooms, you are also more than welcome to pipe in there. Please be aware that each call is automatically going to be placed on hold, but we will answer it in the order received. So just relax and listen to the show while you wait. You'll still be able to hear what's going on. When you get on the line, we ask that you be as clear as possible and direct with your question, asking for something specific, and restricting your inquiry to one question. So please try to avoid a series of questions. We want to keep it tight and focused, so this is going to let us take calls for all the people waiting in line, okay? So thank you very much for that. All right. So again, that number is 724-444-4851. Now, while we're waiting for the phone calls to come in, as you were saying, Steve, that mundane astrology is an interest of yours. Maureen's laughing. What's so funny, Maureen? You got to tell us now. You can't just laugh.
Mundane astrology and prostitution.
Yeah. Oh, that's right. That's right. That's right. I always love our.
Steve comes out there on left field, and he's hilarious.
I always love where these
like
intellectual
the English,
go.
Those English people that are prim and proper, but no, they're not.
Yeah.
No, they're not.
that primness is just a setup for a comedy punchline later. That's all that is. That's all. The British love their comedy, and they're masters at it. You know, not saying that you're a comedian or anything.
You know what they really do. You know what they really are all about.
What's
you
that?
Know, Never, I can't say it on the, what is family hour, isn't it still?
Oh, yes, that's right. This isn't, that's right, family hour, always.
Yeah, you know who you are, Steve. What's a, like some spotted dick and a cup of tea.
Well, unfortunately, even though I'm certainly no
Edgar. You know me so well.
Yeah, especially the past life.
I'm certainly no Edgar Casey, but I'm definitely ready to take some calls for sure. One thing I wish that I had Edgar Casey's talent, but still the best we can do, those of us who do have talent, is to work on what we have and look up to those who possess more talent than we do and emulate them. You know, and one thing I love about this type of work is, again, just being able to reach out and touch to people and interact with them. So go ahead and let's light those phone calls up. We're ready to take some calls. Absolutely. We don't have the sleeping prophet. I'm going to stay awake during the divination, fortunately. I wish that I could go into trances and give readings, but, you know, my method.
You can, Stephen, you can.
Steve, you too can be like that.
Yes, yes, I know. It's hard for me to be able to really relax to that level, you know.
Have to tell spirit what you want.
Is it that simple?
You have to give them permission. You're telling them that you can't and won't do that, and they won't interfere with your intentions. So right. I've learned that we have to tell spirit what we want. I can tell you this. A few weeks ago, I was really worried about how I would pay my mortgage. And I got really annoyed with spirit. And I said to my guide, Arthur, I committed to doing this work. And I was told that I would always be okay. I don't expect to be earning a fortune, but I was told that I would be okay. And I'm not okay. And this is not acceptable. The next day, I had so many bookings. My mortgage was paid. So I teach students that they shouldn't feel they are beholden to spirit, that they have their own consciousness, and we can say what we want. But particularly, I think, when it comes to our work with spirit, we have to tell them what we're open to. And I believe that anybody can, we can all say that we want to work with spirit in different ways.
Mm-hmm.
And I think when we say that, it begins.
So you chastened Arthur, you scolded him a little bit, and that had an effect.
Yeah, I mean, I was saying that my side of the deal is not, your side of the deal is not being delivered right now.
Right.
And I'm confused. And if you can't deliver your side of the deal, I have to review my side of the deal.
Very interesting. I've had moments like that in my life where I scolded my spiritual guidepost, as it were. Not so much a guide, but, you know, different terminology, I guess, but same situation. You know, I say to God, how, you know, why are you doing this? You're not supposed to let this happen. You know, I got kind of angry, and I've noticed that sometimes when I do finally kind of put my foot down, that some results do occur. It's almost as if the spirit world sometimes wants to test our limits, maybe. Yeah, I don't know. I'm speculating.
Yeah, they do, because we're learning. We're here to learn. So they do.
Wow, that is just absolutely interesting. That's so Arthur started holding up to his end of the bargain. Very interesting. Arthur. I like that name.
Yes, it's English.
Yes, well, I mean, it's
no,
it's,
I like that name too.
It's a good vibration.
Arthur. Yes, it sounds nice on the mouth.
I was speaking with a friend of mine about the vibratory rates of names and how changing one's name can affect one's outcome in life.
Oh, yeah, you know, I agree.
Have you heard things of that
nature? No, well, listen, my father wanted to name me Giddle. Bear with, hold on, wait for it. She left. Okay, it's Sheila. Now, if I was named Sheila, I think I would have been an extremely different person.
Yeah, I can't see you as a Sheila, Marnie.
No. Oh, I'm Sheila.
I can't.
I don't know. I don't either. But you know, when I was a little girl, up until I was three, and I remember, I'm one of those people that remember more about, I mean, so clearly 3 years old. I mean, vivid, clearly where we lived and everything about the, everything. I have my memories really intact with that. And I used to, people call me Maureen and I'd say my name, I would get angry, I'd cry. I said, my name was George. I don't know where, and I don't, we didn't have any George, anybody in our family. There was no relative and no one named George. And I would become like, I would actually go into tantrums every time someone would call me Maureen. This went on until the time I was about 4 years old for about a whole year, as I can remember, from 3 to 4. And I'm wondering where that came from. And I now, when I reflect back, I'm sure it was something that was interesting, but I didn't know.
You think it could have been maybe a residue of your life?
I don't know. It must have been, I mean, I remember being, I wasn't just like I had a pretend friend. It was like I was extremely vigilantly angry about that was not my name. So maybe so. I don't know. I don't know, but I remember it. And there's six kids, and my oldest sister is, 10 years older than me, and she remembers it, but I remember being very angry. And then it just kind of faded away. It's interesting. Yeah, so it must have been something. I'm not saying I believe it. All I know is what I know. Why would I be so angry?
Yeah.
It was,
Definitely.
Yeah, and there was no George. Like I said, there was no George anywhere to be found in my family. Where there's no uncles, there's no great aunt, no nothing. There's nobody named George in our family at all. Not even a middle name. So,
I've always wondered why that was necessary to have that purging, that forgetting, that cleansing of the memory before you come into your next incarnation. I've always wondered why that was necessary. Why we can't, carry around a memory of our past incarnations that is easily available to us,
Well, apparently maybe so that even Adam thing, maybe because Adam ate the apple, really. and messed it up for everybody. And at that time, we all could come in knowing all our past lives, but then no more. And then
that's
we all have
right.
to labor and have baby work.
I forget. Here I was thinking that my infancy was sinless. I didn't have a sinless infancy. No, the doctrine of original sin, I suppose, which I've never really understood that.
I'm sorry, Steve. I'm sorry to interrupt you, but what kind of music do you play? I know you're a musician.
Oh, yes, I like classical music.
Classical music, yes.
Yeah, Bach and Chopin and things of that nature.
So on your guitar, you play that kind of music?
Right. I have a nylon string guitar. And then piano. Oh. I also love the piano.
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
is that everybody? And he's single. I think.
You know what? I'm the single one, but Steve's the one who gets the call from California, your neck of the woods, Maureen. Steve, we have a call for you from California.
Thank you, Stephen. Who's calling from California? Hello, California?
Is that me?
Yes, are you in California?
Oh, I have a California phone number, but I'm in Seattle. That's why.
Well, we don't want to speak to you then.
I don't have an address. My name is Susie Marie.
Susie Marie.
Susie Marie.
Susie Marie. Well, how can we help you, Susie Marie?
Well, I want to know where I should take my direction, as in work. Because I was a massage therapist, but I haven't been able to do the work, and I haven't found anything that anyone will hire me to do.
Okay. Well, what I want to say to you, Susie Marie, is I feel that I know you've been struggling. The cards are showing me that, but I also know that you're very, very capable. That you have lots to offer, and you're brilliant with people. Now, intuitively, I feel like things turn around for you, but I feel it takes a while. I feel as though it's August that you really find your feet. I feel as though there's a really great opportunity for you in August. And when I ask the cards for more information, I get a wonderful card, which is the Ten of Cups. And it's really
great.
A cup that reflects a person finding their niche and belonging. So I feel it's August, to be quite honest with you. And I'd like to say to you, I feel it's next week, but that's not what I sense. But I do want to say to you that it's worth waiting for.
Okay.
So I'd rather
I spent 12 years on the street, and I've only got a month off of the street, so that's why I'm I think that's probably the best question to ask.
Okay, but I feel you're going to be okay. I do feel that there's a good opportunity for you in August. I feel that you get what you deserve in August, and I feel that you'll be very settled. I've also got the four of wands, and I, that indicates to me as well that you'll be taken care of, you'll be settled. I don't feel that massage is the right field for you, but I am very confident from looking at the cards that you'll be okay in August. Now, how do you plan to manage things in the meantime?
I don't know. Right now I have a place I can stay, but it's not something that I can keep forever. You know, I mean, it could end next week and I'd be back on the street.
I really have no idea.
I mean, there's no route that I've been able to take to find money.
Okay, but do you feel that you can ask whether it could continue until August, September?
I can't ask for it because basically where I live is they're selling a condo. Once it's sold, I have to leave.
Okay. Well, I don't feel, I'm obviously you've got to continue looking for an opportunity, but I don't feel that that condo sells quickly.
No, and it doesn't. It's not an easy condo to sell.
Well, maybe that's a good thing, but I feel you're okay. I really do feel that by the 10th of August, there's an opportunity for you, and I feel that you get to stay in that condo until September, actually. So I feel that when September comes, you'll be able to actually move.
Wow. Okay.
And I feel that the person, in my own place, or go to Canada. Sorry?
Is it move in the direction of out of this house into my own house, or move like into another country like Canada?
No, I feel I'm not saying you'll move abroad, but I certainly feel that you'll move from that condo in September.
Okay.
But I feel that there's a younger male that offers you an opportunity and that's going to help you.
Okay.
And honestly, all of the cards I've laid down are good cards. I can see I've got a pentacle card reversed in the near future, so I know that money's going to be tight in the near future, obviously. But in the longer term, you're going to be just okay. All right?
Sweet. Thanks so much.
You're welcome. We wish you the best.
But what is your name again?
My name's Steve.
Thank you, Steve.
You're welcome.
Meeting you
good
all.
Luck. Bye now.
Steve, thank you very much.
I'm still here. I just don't know if I'm supposed to get off the phone or not. You going to just mute me so I can listen?
You can hang up and listen online.
All right. Thank you very much for that, Steve. Really helped her out. Anybody who wants a free 6-minute reading who is not registered at psychicaccess.com can do so. And before we move to Maureen's call, I'd like to repeat the call-in number. It is 724-444-4851. And Maureen, we have a call for you from North Carolina.
Thank you. Hello, North Carolina. Hello?
Hello?
Hi. May I ask who's calling?
Is this Maureen?
This is Maureen, yes.
Wow, so good to hear your voice. My name is Zoe, also Margaret.
Oh, hi, Zoe.
It's amazing. Hi.
You're sweet.
Hi.
What can I help you with?
Okay, anyway.
<You're>
wow,
cute.
That's so cool. Anyway, a couple friends of mine are paranormal researchers, and they've invited me to go to a haunted place, and I can't say that I... Well, I don't really want to go, but I'm going to pray, okay, when I go there for them and for the place and for the spirit or the poltergeist or whatever, because it's a very unclear situation. It's one of the worster ones, if that's
possible. No, I'm familiar with what you're talking about because I participated. So you've got the right person to take this call.
Thank you.
Well, it's true,
I love these girls, but, you know, and I don't really do that normally, so I told them I would go for moral support and pray, but I'm a little antsy because the history is a little bit scared. It's like there supposedly is a murderer, but when you look at the person's name, there's no records of it, so we're not sure. And What do you think? What do you think about the whole thing?
I want to ask you something. You said they're all girls on the investigation team. What you're talking about? Are you saying all girls?
Yeah.
Not that I'm against that. Okay, I'm not saying that. And are they seasoned investigators? Are they?
Both of them are. They have equipment, EVP, and right. all that. They're going to turn all the electricity off, and I'm just going to sit and pray. I'm going to have my hands lifted, and pray.
I don't feel that there's going to be any situation. In fact, I actually feel that whoever's connected with this property as well, living-wise, I'm talking about, they look like they're okay people as well. I don't know who they contacted.
It's her cousin, and they're having problems, bad things moving really bad.
Hey, they live there? Things. They live there at this property? Their family people?
Yeah, they're going to leave for that night. They're going to leave.
So there's
and
family
And I
people.
Don't mind because I like both the people that I'm going to be with. So one way or the other, you know, it'll be
well,
okay.
Well, you know, this is my feeling. First of all, I feel that really, Zoe, I get if you're going for the reason you're going, I feel that it's almost like I see you're not feeling like you're in control of your life right there. You know, like you're going in a direction that you normally wouldn't. Now, I don't feel it's going to be a bad experience. I don't feel that. I don't see that. But for you, it's like I just get that you can get yourself really stressed out just from the whole idea of it, you know, going there, anticipating. But if these two people are, it's maybe the people that I'm seeing that are not the live people, but what I'm seeing there is not anything death-defying. I don't feel if it's and I feel they're going to get some good news from this investigation. It's going to be positive news. So my feeling is if you didn't go, Zoe, if you didn't go, what would happen if you did not go?
They would be fine without me, but I you know, I'm kind of like protective of my friends, you know, and I kind of feel like if they invited me, they may need me, you know, and so I feel like I should go, you know.
They've done
other things for me, I mean, you know.
I'm not saying for you not to go, but I'm just feeling that I just feel, you know, a lot of times we put things out in the universe about things that we feel are going to be negative, right? And like you said, you've heard about these things at this place. I don't feel that there's going to be negativity there. I actually don't see that at all. And like, I know what you're talking about because I've done investigations. I just came back from New York State. I mean, I go out of state for these. And so I get what you're saying. And, you know, you can hear all the stuff about a place and you get this idea. And it's just like if you get wound it up or everybody gets wound it up, sometimes the whole thing could go off the deep end. You have to stay really objective. I just feel that, you know what, the best, you know, talking about prayer and everything else, and I think it's very positive energy, is to put out really good energy about how safe it is, actually, before you go. That would be to your best interest, because I feel that it would make you feel like your personal power is more intact. And I really don't see any negativity coming from this at all. And I do feel that there's going to be some good news that will come from this.
Well, is this poltergeist, or is this the person that was supposedly murdered there? Or
I don't see any murder that happened there. And that's the thing, when you hear about stuff like that you're not sure if it's factual or not, you need to go in with an objective mind. Because, you know, like I said, I'm familiar with what you're talking about because I've done I have good friends that are colleagues that are paranormal investigators for years and years and years. And so the thing of it is, you can hear all the stories you want. I just don't feel this is going to be a bad experience. But so if that's, you know, in the meantime, but before you go, you know, you have this idea and you've heard about things, right? And so I guess I'm just trying to encourage you. I'm not telling you what to do, but encouraging you to maybe meditate on it before you go and be open, have your mind open to the fact that I just, you know, I could be wrong, but I just don't see that it's going to be volatile, is that the word? It's going to be a terrible experience. I don't see that. I see it to be very actually good.
And will it make the house livable? Will it make the house livable?
Yeah,
the
and I feel that, you know, there's things you can do. You can sage out, you know, you can do stuff.
A lot of times, you can create
havoc and energies and where they don't want to be messed with, and you can kind of, you know, you can kind of relax it, is what I see.
I just want
actually,
them to
it looks
go
like
home.
A lot of fairness
I want them to go there, you know. I don't fear them, but I just don't want them there. So, if I can help, you know, that's...
I would bring sage. So we bring some sage smudge sticks. You know what those are. Bring sage.
And buying them by the crate, I think. That's what we were talking about.
Yeah. Holy water is always a good thing to do.
Yeah.
And also sweet grass. Sweet grass is very important. Yes. No one knows that. Sweet grass, because after you burn the sage, you burn sweet grass, and sweet grass, after the sage takes away all the negative energies, sweet grass will open up to take all the positive energy back in.
No one ever knows that.
There's a little something for you. It looks very positive. The experience, I see it to be positive, so.
Okay.
I know I can't tell you not to worry, but I feel that if you go in with a positive mind, you'll be fine. And actually, it'll be a very enlightening experience in itself, and a positive one. I do see that.
I see myself being asked to do this again. That's fine. They're my friends. I'll do it. You know.
Well, you don't have to. That's the thing. Like you said, they don't expect you to.
So,
I know. You could also do this at home and be supportive.
Okay.
Anyway. Okay. You can do that, Zoe, just as well. They'd be okay. Okay, but it'll be okay. And remember, not all things are what they appear to be, you know, sometimes. And that's the way to go in with that. I don't see any, it looks positive. It looks like it'll be a very interesting experience, actually.
Yeah.
Okay, so come back and tell us how it is.
Well, I will. Thank you.
Okay, you're welcome. Bye, Zoe.
Bye.
Thank you very much for that, Maureen. You can find Maureen at psychicaccess.com. She is accurate and reliable. Call her up. Now, I actually have a call from Massachusetts. Hello, are you there, Massachusetts? Hello, who am I speaking with? Okay, we're going to hold on while we connect our caller from Massachusetts. I believe we might have some technical issues going on, which I'll take advantage of this. Okay. Well, I'll just take advantage of this opportunity while we're waiting on more callers to come through. I think we're trying to connect one now as we speak to remind everyone that if you want to get a reading, if you need direction in life, then you can get readings from all of us at psychicaccess.com. And okay, actually, we have Louisiana on the line now. Hello, who am I speaking with in Louisiana?
Hello.
Hi, what's your first name, madam?
My name is Maricris.
Well, thank you very much for calling Psychic Viewpoint. How may I help you? What's your question?
Well, I'm starting a new job on the 27th of this month, and I just wanted to see... if y'all can give me any insight how this will go.
Absolutely. I can definitely help you out with that. Let's look at the trajectory of this job. How everything is going to get started once you start working it. Okay, one moment please while I pick up on your situation and while I pick up on you working at this job. I think it's going to go very nicely. In fact, I'm quite sure of it. Trump number 19, the sun, appears in this spread. And the sun is a classic symbol of satisfaction and happiness. And furthermore, it's a symbol of security. The card is reversed. So that tells me that these things will be just starting in your life, just starting in this job, you know, in your life as a result of this job. So if you've been dissatisfied with work, then I would expect this to change somewhat soon. And again, the Trump number 19, the sun, promises me that good times will actually start happening. Now, by the same token, if things have been wonderful at work so far and hunky-dory, then this particular card could mean that the good times are coming to a close. So you see, it really all depends on how things in your job have been going up until now. Usually the sun card is a very, very positive energy in every case, and it will be in this case. Right now, the way things are going to start out with this job, we have the Queen of Cups, which is associated with the sign of Scorpio. Now, this is a sign of power, you see, and this is what's going to be engaging your attention and your efforts at work probably for the next couple of months. Power. who are you? Who are going to be your allies at work? Who are going to be your enemies? I suppose we all have to have them. Work politics dictates that we have allies and enemies. Well, who are yours going to be? These sorts of questions are going to be answered. So, Scorpio, power maneuvers. Who are you going to be allied with, and who are you going not to be allied with? Those questions are going to be paramount. The sun period, as I'm calling it, is going to follow that. And again, I'm saying that is very positive. So that's what I'm picking up as far as your work situation is concerned. Okay.
That sounds great.
All right. Well, I really hope that helps you out. Looks like you got some nice stuff to look forward to there. Okay.
That sounds great. Thank you so much.
Yes, ma'am. Thank you for calling Psychic Viewpoint, and come visit us at psychicaccess.com.
I sure will. Thank you.
Yes, ma'am. Thank you. Bye bye. Okay, well, Steve, you have a caller from Texas.
Thank you, Stephen. Who's calling from Texas?
Hello, it's Sarah Corpy.
Hi, Sarah, did you say?
Excuse me?
Did you say your name is Sarah?
Sarah, yes. S-A-R-A, no H.
Okay, great, Sarah. How can we help?
Well, I met somebody back in 2011, February.
Oh, we're losing you, Sarah. I heard you say you met somebody in 2011, and I didn't hear any more.
Since then, we've pretty much been together. I believe him to be my twin flame. His first name's...
The line's cutting up, Sarah. I can't hear you. Can you hear me, Sarah?
Am I going to be able to get back in communication with him and re-establish the connection?
Sarah, your line's cutting up really badly. I heard you say you were with, met somebody in 2011, and then I lost you. Well, tell me quickly what your question is.
My question is, am I going to be able to get back in touch with him, even after all this time that has passed?
Okay, when did you separate?
Well, we haven't really been together, but we've, I guess, known each other for almost 3 years, since 2011. And what broke our connection happened in March of last year. I was communicating with him up till either April or May of last year.
Okay.
And okay. I do not know how to get back in contact with him since this happened. And my question is, am I going to be able to get back and have that connection that I had with him as it was before?
Well, I honestly, Sarah, looking at the cards, I would say it's very unlikely that the two of you would be together. I feel it's unlikely that you would create a relationship together. But that said, I do feel that there will be contact. I feel that there will be contact before the summer. It's not immediate. I feel it's before the summer. So we're looking at late spring. It feels quite like May to me. But as I said, I don't feel...
Would you say that again? That was a little too fast for me.
Sorry, say that again, Sarah?
I said I couldn't understand that you were talking too fast.
Okay, well, your line's cutting up. So I was saying that I don't feel that the two of you would create a relationship together, but I do feel that you will have contact with each other, and I feel that that will be in May of this year.
Okay,
so it's May for contact, but again, looking at the cards and just tuning into it myself intuitively, I wouldn't set the expectation within yourself that this is going to be a relationship. I feel it's more a friendship connection. But I do feel that you'll have contact again, as I said. Okay?
Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome, Sarah. Good luck.
No, there's also somebody else that's actually asked me to marry him.
Okay, I can only take one question though, Sarah. We're only able to take one question per caller. So you could maybe call back next week?
Yes, I can.
Okay, Great, Sarah. Well, we'll look forward to speaking with you.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you very much for that reading, Steve. And that is actually a very good point. I'd like to emphasize that when you call in, we need you to be very clear and direct with your question. The quality of your reading depends on the quality of your question. So step up to the plate, take responsibility for the quality of the reading that you get, and formulate the best question you possibly can while you're waiting for us to take your call. Meanwhile, Maureen, we have a call for you from South Dakota.
Thank you. Hello, South Dakota.
Hello, Maureen.
Hi. Hi, who's this?
My question, this is Maida.
Hi.
I have a question about my health.
Okay.
I'm not sick, but I don't know. I'm like so tired. I missed the show tonight because I come home and went to bed and didn't wake up. My energy had just been so low, and
okay.
I've just become terribly forgetful, but I don't really have anything. And I'm not sick or anything, so I was wondering if you could, you know, see what's going on there.
Well, you know, okay, yes. First of all, I'm not a doctor, everybody. But, so, you know, I do suggest that, you know, or encourage you to, you might want to check with, of course, with your primary physician. But, you know, this is what I'm getting. For you, I'm feeling that it's a question of, not being, how can I say? I don't want to say this the wrong. Well, here you go. It goes like this. How do you say? It's not being connected with yourself on the spiritual level, and I do feel that it's almost. I'm not saying you're consciously doing this, but it's like I see that there's a disconnect with yourself, and it's like it's. I do see you heading towards a much more feeling your physical well-being. You're heading in that direction within the next 10 days, 2 weeks. But it's very unconventional for you. I'm wondering something about do you – you know how I feel we're colored by the people in our environment. You know, there's certain people that we're surrounded by.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes we get drained if we're sensitive. I do feel that you're very you're just who you are. You're a very intuitive, sensitive person, and I feel that. And I call it psychic vampires. They're out there. You know, anybody can be one. Well, not me, but you know, some people can be very draining, even when you don't. If you're not paying attention, there. It's like, and I do see there's somebody around you. It looks like a male energy, a young man energy, but it's like I just feel that you. For you, maybe it's a good idea to try to go into some meditative state. I'm not saying meditation's not easy for me either or anybody else, but for you, it's like your body's saying you need to not only rest, but I feel it's not because your physical being is out of whack, but again, go to the doctors just in case, but because you need to get back in tune with you quiet your mind. You need to quiet your mind. And because you're such an intuitive person and it's not getting nurtured. I hope I'm making sense to you, but...
Yeah, you are making absolutely sense because I do that. I just give my energy away. I just open up and give my energy away. And I am a teacher, so I'm wondering if that person you're talking about is very young.
Okay.
Comes to mind, and it's a student of mine, so that could be it, too.
Yeah, and you know, the thing, absolutely. And the thing of it is, I don't feel that, you know, it's almost like people aren't aware how sensitive, like, you're just who you are, and it comes, and it's hard for people that are naturally like that, and you're a teacher around people, or younger people, maybe even, and going through all their issues, and you may not even be aware of the fact that you are getting so much stuff, and you're not even giving it away. It's just that you need to poke. You know what? I suggest you, like I said, meditation things, but also read up on some things that would be helpful. Helpful for who you are, because you're like an empath. You're like a sponge. I really feel, I do see you feeling a lot better. I mean, you're heading toward, things are going to feel like fantastic within the next 2 weeks. Again, please go because I'm not a doctor. I don't want to say, you know.
Well, the thing is, you can't go to the doctor and tell them this. They're like, well, there's nothing there.
That's true. But you can say, I don't know, there's something wrong with me and what's wrong. But no, I do feel that you need to get back to yourself, your inner spirit, your inner voice self. And it's very important for you, of all people. It is just what it is. You're special.
Okay. Thank you, Maureen.
You're welcome. Have a good every day of your life and night.
Okay. Thank you. Good night.
Bye-bye.
Thank you very much for that, Maureen. Anybody who wants a reading from Maureen or Steve or myself or any of the gifted psychics at Psychic Access, just point your web browser at psychicaccess.com. I just want to send out a reminder. The call-in number is 724-444-4851. Call us up. We would love to hear from you and take your call. The lines are open, and we are now waiting. We are now waiting for the calls.
Wait for it. Wait.
What is this? Something coming across the transom now?
No, I'm just messing with you. Well, yeah, maybe.
Actually, I have a call from Alabama. That's right, Alabama. How may I help you? Hello, Alabama.
Hello.
Hi. How are you this evening?
Could be better.
Well, what's on your mind tonight? What's your question?
It's kind of a broad term. I was just wondering if things are going to get better for me, because right now they just don't seem like they are.
All right. Are things going to get better? Now, I'm sure there's one or two or a handful of issues that phrase "get better" refers to, or things get, you know, refers to. And are they going to get better? Absolutely, I see that they are. You don't have any, whatever the things are, be it financial, romantic things, I don't know what they mean. That would be sheer speculation on my part, but you know very well what they mean. And those are indeed going to get better. Right now, Trump number 18 is the moon. That's the period of time you're in right now. The Trump number 18, the moon, this card is about domestic matters, for one thing, because it pertains to the sign of Cancer, domestic matters, family. Also, because the moon is shifty and shady, going from dark to half full to full of light, it's a card of deception, do you see? Things don't, colors and distances aren't what they seem in the night, and they change in the waning and waxing strength of the moon. So this card tells me there are people around you who are lying to you. There are false friends around you. This is a card of false friendship and backbiting. Okay, so what I want you to do is inventory your personal relationships right now and ask yourself, who could it be? Who could be the Judas? Who could be the false friend, the person who smiles in my face but really has a secret agenda? Because indeed, there's one, at least one, perhaps multiple people. Now, specifically, I'm picking up on a younger male, and by younger, that could be anything from 0 years in age to 25 years in age, 26 years in age, and it also could pertain to a personality type, a juvenile type of personality. So I don't want you to rule out mature individuals based upon this description either, okay? It's going to be a juvenile type of personality, very watery type of personality, meaning very receptive, sensitive, maybe even touchy, depressed, a depressed sort of person. That's going to probably be the one. Anyway, this person is also going to be leap into prominence in your life in the coming weeks and maybe even coming months. But the good news, light at the end of the tunnel, the Ten of Swords at the end of this timeline here is going to wrap this saga up, and it promises a change in your material world, a rebirth in your finances, a rebirth in your vitality. So, you know, that would also signal a close of illnesses, and so that's a boon. That's a boon. So in light of all of these comments, the short answer to your question is yes, things are going to get better, okay?
Okay.
All right.
That sounds so much better.
Very good, very good. Well, happy 2014 to you. I really appreciate you calling us tonight, okay?
Okay. I very much appreciate that.
Yes, ma'am. Thank you, ma'am. Well, we appreciate you listening and calling. And come visit us at psychicaccess.com and get your free 6-minute reading if you haven't registered already, okay?
Okay, thank you.
Yes, ma'am. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Okay, Steve, you have a caller from Texas.
Thank you, Stephen. Who's calling from Texas?
Hello?
Hi, what's your name?
Virginia.
Sorry, your name is?
I'm sorry?
I didn't catch your name, sorry.
Okay, my first name is Virginia.
Virginia, how can I help you, Virginia?
Well, this is kind of new to me, in a way. But I would like to know if things are ever going to change, if I'm ever going to be happy. That's a hard one, huh?
Well, it's not a hard one, Virginia, but in terms of, you know, I can give you guidance on that, but it's not a very specific question. So,
okay.
And I can speak to you in general terms about how to focus on and create happiness in life, but that doesn't necessarily help you specifically if you're having, for example, if you're unhappy because of a relationship or you're unhappy because of your career. So can you be more, do you want to be more specific?
To be more specific, I guess it would be, this has been an ongoing thing since as long as I can remember, since childhood, you know, right. Are things ever going to get better for me? I just don't see a light at the end of the tunnel.
So you're not happy with anything in your life?
I mean, you know, I've been through quite a lot of stuff, and, you know, and I've had a lot of losses in the last 3 years. You know, my mother, my grandchild, my brother. I mean, it's just, and relationship, it's just been a really, it's an ongoing thing.
Okay. Well, it's complicated because, you know, you're asking a question that really is all encompassing. We're talking about trying to give you guidance or a read on pretty much your entire life, all areas of life. And
right.
In order to do that, I'd need to I would need to look in far more detail with you. So it's not, I can't answer your whole life and all departments of life on the radio show. What I can tell you is I can see that the Wheel of Fortune turned against you, and that a lot of it's related to family, as you said. I can see that at the moment there's a lot of frustration in you because of a perceived lack of justice. So it doesn't feel that justice has been served, or it feels that things have gone against you legally. Now, I do feel that in the near term, you will actually be quite satisfied with the outcome of two of those situations. And I do feel that there's some kind of financial recompense or financial reward coming to you. So that's the good news. But, you know, if you're this unhappy with yourself and your life, some money and winning a particular battle isn't necessarily going to fix everything. There's a much deeper issue to be addressed, which is how do you, Virginia, create a life that you are happy with? And as I said, although I see some success in the near term, for you to create a life that enables you to be happy, at peace, joyful, flowing, then there needs to be far more work. It's not just about the near term and some financial gain and a success in the one of the particular
Correct.
Or two of the struggles. So it's complex, really. But I tell you a couple of generic things that sound obvious, but people forget them. Really, finding happiness is about doing the things that we enjoy. So finding things that give us pleasure. Now, if that's
right.
having a cup of coffee in the sunshine, if that's one of those things, then do it. If it's reading books, read books. But you've got to find things that you enjoy, things that uplift you, that make you feel good, because they increase your vitality. And you need to be strong and avoid tension, stress, discord in life, in all areas of life. Because that's not good for you. And you've got to ensure that you have a more harmony than you have discord in your
right.
your life. So that's what you need to do. Now, how you do that is down to you, because we all like different things, we all value different things. But you basically have to find ways to boost your energy, to make yourself feel more positive. And you can start with little things. You know, if it's getting a cat, get a cat. It will start with small things, but you've got to start building more joy, more pleasure, more optimism into your life, so that when things are going wrong around you, you still have things that you can be excited about, that you can enjoy. And that's a, you know, generic answer to the generic question, how do I find happiness? But as I right. said, in the next few months, I see some financial improvements, money coming to you. I see you feeling better. But my concern for you is you've got to look within yourself and really turn a corner for the long term in terms of knowing what makes you happy, what makes you feel uplifted, and in building those things into your life. And if you need to, start with small things.
Right, right. And you have hit on a lot of subjects that, right on the nose. So, you know,
good.
You picked up on a lot of things.
Well, good, Virginia. And I wish you all the best. You know, I know
yes.
that life is challenging, and for some people it's more challenging than it is for others, but life is also wonderful, and even when there's darkness and difficulty, there are wonderful things, and there is light, and that's what you've got to focus on. And whatever makes you feel good, whatever makes you feel stronger, you've got to embrace that and build more of that into your life.
Right.
So that the light is far stronger, is far more prominent than the challenges, the difficulties that you face at any point in time. Okay?
Yeah. Okay.
Well, I wish you luck, Virginia.
I appreciate
look
it.
Look after yourself.
Yeah, thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Thank you very much for that, Steve. Maureen, you have a caller. I wanted
Virginia.
To say... Right.
See,
right.
Okay, see. Hi, Virginia. Hi, caller from Virginia.
Hi, Maureen. How are you? Thanks for taking my call.
Thanks. And what's your name?
You're speaking to me.
Oh, I'm sorry. What did you say? I'm sorry.
It's D.
D-I-D. I thought you sound familiar. I go, wait, I know that voice. How are you?
I have a very weird question for you.
Okay, that's okay.
I am looking for work, so my resume is out there.
Okay.
And I notice it's been on this couple job site for about 30 days, and I noticed that someone that I've dated, they have been looking at it probably 3 or 4 times, which not sure why. So I don't know what you're picking up.
Oh, so you're telling me that your resume is out there
mm-hmm.
out there some, well, how you put
on
it,
a website.
It's out,
mm-hmm.
on a website, and someone that you've dated has been looking at this.
Uh-huh.
Oh, that's interesting. Actually, that's very interesting. Okay, now, is this somebody at one time, this is what I'm getting, whoever this somebody is, because I feel that it's deliberate. I mean, it's... this somebody, when you reflect on the somebody that you used to date, was it somebody that you can reflect on? It looks like it was the winter time, and it was not a good victory in how it, whatever became of it, but or how it fizzled out or just went out of direction. But it felt like it was during a time where this person wasn't really in control of their life, like they weren't on the right. They are very shallow or super. There's incompletion around this. So when you reflect back on this person. Does that sound like the person that maybe there was unfinished business with?
I wouldn't say unfinished, really. I think maybe a year ago, if you had posed the question, I probably would have said maybe yes. I wanted an apology, but I'm over that.
But now it doesn't matter to you? Well, okay. Well, that's a good thing on your part. But it does appear like, I have a feeling, because you did bring this up in the way you did, it's interesting, because I do feel that they're, because, you know, what I'm seeing is that they're looking at your resume, not just because they're interested in you getting hired somewhere, they're interested in you personally. And so, you know, it does, it whatever becomes of this, and so I don't know what your take is on this, or is intrigued
no,
you.
I have no desire to venture back in that arena. It's, you know, their energy is very dark and they're very inconsistent. So I'm over that.
Okay, so, well, I get that. But, you know, it wouldn't be such a bad... I'm not saying that this it would be something that something would reconnect so much, but whatever becomes of this or whatever happens, it does appear like good news. And you said something interesting. You said maybe it was a year ago. You said you would have been nice to get I'm sorry or an apology.
Right.
So, you know, it may be that this is what it all... It may be just that. It may be being acknowledged. And I don't feel that it's something that carries on and on and on. But... And it's nice that you're able to let it go, and that's a very nice feeling. I got to tell you, it must be very nice. But still, it wouldn't hurt if somebody – and it would just be done with. It's nothing more than that. I don't see any chaos or anything coming from it. But I don't feel it's about you getting work from this person looking at
you. Okay.
Exactly.
Okay.
And that's even better because of the person you had a connection with. I don't feel that it would be – It's almost like by association. If he was or whatever, this person, it wouldn't be good.
Okay.
You know. But good for you. In fact, any news coming your way is very positive, by the way. You've got some great stuff coming up. Great stuff.
Well, I am still looking for work, so I'm just hoping the universe will send something soon.
I do see some good news coming your way very soon. Very good stuff.
Awesome.
Okay,
Dee.
Well, thank you for calling.
Thank you, Maureen.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Thank you very much for that, Maureen. I have a call now from New York. Hello, who am I speaking with in New York? Hi, New York, are you out there?
Hey, how you doing?
I'm doing fine. Thank you for calling. May I have your first name, please, sir?
Yeah, my first name's Roy.
Roy. Well, thank you very much for calling us tonight, Roy. What's your question?
Yeah, my question is, my mom's, you know, going through hard financial times, and, you know, I'm trying to help her the best I could, and trying to get her into, like, senior housing, and it's just, like, taking a lot longer than it should have took. So I'm just wondering, do you see anything coming soon?
Is anything coming
from
soon?
My mom?
All right. 1 second while I pick up on the answer to your question, Roy, okay?
Okay.
You know what? I'm seeing here that you guys are going to have to wait some more, and it pains me to say that because I'm a mother's boy. In fact, I'm in the same position as you. I'm caretaking for my mother. And you know what? I'm faced also with some bureaucratic issues as well. And really... When faced with a situation like that, the best way to hasten the process is to get a lawyer, is really what you're going to need to do. Because I'm telling you, from what I'm looking at here, from what I'm picking up, Roy, that you guys are in for a wait. First off, the answer to your question is no. I don't see any development on the bureaucracy behind your mother's support anytime soon.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? What's happening is that your mother exists in an office someplace. You know what I mean? As a statistic or as a file, and she's in somebody's case folder, or you know what I'm saying? She's in somebody's file cabinet right now, and she's going to languish
there.
That's
exactly the way I feel.
Right. So what you need now is a lawyer to sort of speed up the process. You know, if it's an issue like with Social Security or something like that, then there's almost an industry, a legal industry set up. It's almost as if the government expects there to be litigation before it opens up the floodgates to certain types of support or what have you. So that I really do believe that's what we're facing here, a bureaucratic impasse. Do you see,
okay.
Roy?
Oh, okay. And it's,
yes,
you
sir.
Know, it's just it's like a never-ending process. It's always like running into a brick wall over and over again, you know? I think there's going to be a little daylight and the housing's going to come and then nothing works out. It's always, like you said, she's just a statistic.
And it's really unfortunate because to you, she's not a statistic. She's the woman who gave you life, and you have an obvious...
Exactly.
Regard and the commitment to her well-being, you know, and so here's the clash. So, you know, now it's time to shake up the bushes a little bit, Roy, because I tell you what, they're not going to come knocking on your door and saying, okay, here we have all of this ready for you. You know what I mean?
Yes.
So, yeah, I really do wish you all the best on that. And I, for what it's worth, I do see that you're going to be pleased with the way this thing resolves, okay? So you don't have to worry about the long-term ramifications of what's going on, Roy.
Oh, okay. I appreciate that.
Hey, no problem. No problem. I really appreciate you calling us up tonight and listening to the show, and I hope to hear your voice again calling us up on another show one night. So keep on listening, okay?
Okay. Thank you.
Yes, sir, Roy. Have a good one.
Okay, you too.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Okay. Well, that brings us to the end of yet another wonderful show. I'd like to take this opportunity to thank Doug, who works behind the scenes, and he works hard, I might add, to keep us all on our toes and to make sure everything happens nicely. So he's the executive producer, and we want to thank him. Also, I'd like to thank Steve and Maureen for joining me tonight. Now, Maureen, your show is next week, is it not?
Yes, it certainly is, I do declare.
Awesome. Why don't you tell us about it?
Well, it's called Birth Mix Patterns. I'm very excited. Dr. Michelle Payton. Payton, uh-huh. Yes. She will be talking to us. She's found a unique way to blend the wisdom of all the ages, like using astrology, numerology, and the birth order that you were born to answer questions with a level of accuracy. It'll be fascinating. I really am looking forward to the show, and I think everybody else would agree they would love it. So please come.
Yes, we were talking about that outside the show, and I've been looking forward to that. So it's going to be a great one.
Yes, well, it will.
I'd like to take this opportunity to say goodbye to everyone in the chat room and listening at home, and I'll
and
pass
say goodbye
off to my co-host to say goodbye.
Hello, my name is Res Miranda. If you're having relationship, career, or life issues, I'm inviting you to experience what it's like to have access to professional, highly accurate psychics and spiritual advisors you can trust to care and help you. Register now to get your free 6-minute reading by telephone or chat. Get answers. Get access. Psychic access. 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. PsychicAccess.com.